happened to a nicer bunch.
Looks like somebody saved the taxpayers a lot of money, doesn't it? Callahan, what are you doing here?
Oh, we had nothing hot on. Besides, we were close.
Look, Callahan, you get your lying ass in gear and get the hell back to that stakeout squad.
Who do you think did this, Briggs?
You're on loan to stakeout, Callahan.
That's right, Lieutenant. You saw to that.
But we can't have the public crying police brutality every time you go out in the street.
Well, you just might need me on a job like this. Whoever did this was very good at it.
You'd sure be the one to know, Harry.
Well, I just work for the city, Briggs.
So do I. Longer than you. And I never had to take my gun out of its holster once. I'm proud of that.
Well, you're a good man, Lieutenant. A good man always knows his limitations.
Good morning. It's Thursday, May the 4th, and this is The True Conservative. Welcome to all the butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers out there. I'm Ron, your host, and the only true conservative in the United States today. So today, after the Serenity Prayer and the Star-Spangled Banner, we will have Stupid Question, Stuart Varney, Take No Prisoners, No Free Lunch, The Rape of the Mind, and Donald Trump. All that and more when I get back. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing and remove your hats for the national anthem of the United States of America.
Thank you. And now, There's No Free Lunch, 250 Economic Truths by David Bahnsen.
For reasons I do not entirely understand, the clerisy after 1848 turned toward nationalism and socialism and against liberalism and came also to delight in an ever-expanding list of pessimisms about the way we live now in our approximately liberal societies. Anti-liberal utopias, believed to offset the pessimisms, have been popular among the clerisy. Its pessimistic and utopian books have sold millions. But the 20th century experiments of nationalism and socialism, of syndicalism and factories and central planning for investment, of proliferating regulation for imagined but not factually documented imperfections in the market, did not work. And most of the pessimisms about how we live now have proven to be mistaken. It is a puzzle. Perhaps you yourself still believe in nationalism or socialism or proliferating regulation. And perhaps you are in the grip of pessimism about growth or consumerism or the environment or inequality. Please, for the good of the wretched of the earth, reconsider. Deirdre N. McCloskey. I can scarcely add to the wisdom and beauty of this plea. Pessimism has been a failed ideology, has given birth to utopian failures, and has left carnage in its wake. Liberal societies are the antidote to utopianism, and the free and virtuous society cannot happen without a rejection of the failures of pessimism, and subsequently a rejection of the utopian socialisms that have come next.
And that was There's No Free Lunch by David Bahnsen. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. Now a little bit of Stuart Varney.
Became a city of refuge. City officials were not allowed to help the feds enforce immigration laws. In plain English, if illegals made it to San Francisco, they were in and they could stay. Well, there are now 180 sanctuary cities and 11 sanctuary states.
So that's my point. All of the Republican talk show hosts want to make it out like the country's in dire straits and that, we're on the verge of revolution and things that make it out like things are worse than what they really are. But listen to what he's talking about here. He says 180 cities. I Googled it and found out there's 108,000 cities in the United States, and only 180 of them are sanctuary cities. There's 50 states in the union. Now, according to Mr. Varney, 11 states are sanctuary states. That means not even a quarter of the states in the United States are sanctuary states. Only not even a quarter. It would be 12 or more. Probably 13 would make it. But there's 11 states, 180 cities, 180 cities out of 108,000, which is less than 1%, 0.1%. It's insignificant. So again, this is Mr. Stuart Varney trying to make a big deal, a mountain out of a molehill. Yes, it's a stupid idea for cities and states to declare themselves sanctuaries. And why? Because they're not making any type of a statement. They're not virtue signaling. What they're doing is they are making themselves magnets. As Stuart Varney goes on to say, he says that as more and more people come over the border, when Title 42 expires, then they're going to go straight for the sanctuary states and cities. They're the ones that are going to get overrun. But the secret is that all of those cities and states are going to look to the Biden administration for bailouts. Okay, that's one of the big reasons why the Democrats don't want Trump in power. Because if Trump was in the White House, he wouldn't be giving them bailouts. His attitude, as we've seen before, is going to be, you want to be a sanctuary city? You pay for it. You want to be a sanctuary state? You pay for it. So, don't let the Republican talk show hosts get you all worked up into thinking that this is a sign of the apocalypse or something. Far from it. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. And now Donald Trump, 2 minutes, where he's warning of complete and total mayhem when Title 42 ends.
Under my leadership, we had the most secure border in U.S. history by far. We replaced catch and release with detain and deport. One of my most successful policies was Title 42, which allowed for instant expulsion of any illegal alien who crossed our borders. Anybody, if they were bad, we got them out. We got them out fast. Those who trespassed into our country could be immediately sent back to the place from which they came. Every would-be illegal border crosser knew that with Donald Trump in the White House, our border was closed. It was absolutely closed, and they had no chance of getting in, and therefore they didn't come. When Joe Biden came into office, he terminated every successful border policy that was put into place, including Remain in Mexico, one of the best of them all, deliberately throwing open the borders and instituting catch and release and resettling untold millions and millions of illegal aliens into the United States. They're now your neighbors. Congratulations. Now Joe Biden is preparing to remove the last remnants of my Title 42 policy just a few weeks from now, wiping out the few remaining shreds of our southern border. Hundreds of thousands of people will pour in that day, and the judge already said that's what's going to happen. This will mean complete and total mayhem and utter lawlessness, and unlimited numbers of fraudulent asylum seekers flood into the United States unchecked. They are unchecked. Nobody has any idea where they come from. They don't know if they're healthy, if they're sick, if they're insane, or if they're coming from prisons. Already, tens of thousands of illegal aliens have massed on the Mexican side of the border. They're getting ready to storm across the moment Title 42, which is so important, is officially gone. Can you believe they're getting rid of it? And when that happens, countless more will charge in from all over the world. They're coming from all over the world. And some of the states, like California, are saying, come in and we give you free health care, free education. People hear that from other countries. They say, well, that sounds good to me. And they're making a mass charge toward our border. It's absolute lunacy. It will be a mass resettlement of millions and millions of illegal aliens into your communities. And the invasion will be aided, abetted, and facilitated by the Biden administration's every step of the way, every path they take will be made easier by Biden. Congress should move immediately to choke off and terminate all funding for catch and release. We should ban Joe Biden and the communists and the administration from using a single federal taxpayer dollar to set loose illegal aliens into the United States. Now is the time we have to fight to make sure our country survives, because our country cannot take two more years of this invasion. And when I take the oath of office on January 20th, 2025, we will immediately begin the process of fully securing the border and removing the illegal aliens Joe Biden has unlawfully allowed to break into our country. Thank you very much.
And that was Donald Trump warning of a complete and total mayhem when Title 42 ends. And back in a minute. Thank you. Thank you. And so I wanted to, I was thinking about how it is that the left seems to always get away with everything, and that the people, the particularly the activists, they'll run their mouths about anything and everything, and they seem to act with impunity, and they stick their nose into everything. Why? Simple. Because it used to be that if you stuck your nose into something, people would tell you, mind your own business, number one. Number two is you had issues with the stupid question and the stupid idea. Okay? We used to say that to each other. Oh, that's a stupid question. That's a stupid idea. We weren't afraid to do that. Now, the other person might say, no, it's not, and then start defending that position, whatever, or their idea or question. Okay? And we might have an argument or discussion about it. And whoever was right then would be right, of course. And the other person would say, oh, you were right. I'm my mistake, or something of that nature, right? But now we don't have that anymore. The people, activists, right, left, and center, are free to shoot their mouths off because they know there's no consequences, right? It's you can go out and tell McDonald's to change the way they're doing their French fries, because it's not going to cost you anything to do that. What does it cost you? Nothing. Zero. You can go out and complain about Anheuser-Busch, or you can go out and criticize anybody and everybody, any company. Go to work and start criticizing the boss, because it doesn't cost you anything to do so. Why? Because we got rid of the stupid question. We got rid of the stupid idea. So now people feel free to shoot their mouths off about anything, to make any suggestion, any idea. Hey, let's get rid of plastic straws. The reason we don't get rid of plastic straws is because that's a stupid idea. That's why. Okay? Bye-bye. And plus, That was an idea, by the way, from a 10 or 12-year-old kid. So, but anyways, that's where we got rid of it. We can bring that back. Restore the stupid question, the criticism of the stupid question, the stupid idea. So that when Mr. or Ms. Activist comes to, and they'll do it to you. They'll come over to your house and say, gee, how come you do this? How come you do that? Or they'll offer you free advice. You know, you should do this, or you should do that, or you should raise your kids differently. And the best way to deal with them is to be able to say, that's a stupid idea. Okay? Make them pay for it. As I've always said with the left, if they're going to win, make them earn it. Make them earn it. This is a big, valuable country in lots of ways. And if they're going to take it away from us, then they should be taking it out of our cold, dead fingers. They should be earning it. They should be doing it with the last puff of breath that they've got. But we give it away. We give it away. Here, have the country. Here, have this, have that, have our culture, have history, have our educational system. And I mean, we, the main culprits are the people that pose as leaders in the Republican and conservative movement, the William F. Buckleys of the world, and the Republican talk show hosts that really do a whole lot of nothing. So, but anyways, the point is, you want to be effective. When somebody comes to you with a stupid question, tell them, that's a stupid question. If they come to you with a stupid idea, tell them, no, that's a stupid idea. That's what it should have been the refrain with AOC. Instead of everybody on the radio complaining about the AOC's Green New Deal, we should have been laughing at her. And we should have been telling her and telling each other and telling everybody, that's a stupid idea. Period. And I don't have to explain why. She has to explain how it's not a stupid idea. Because again, the presumption's made for the status quo. The people that want change have the burden of proof. She wants change. Prove it. And the way to get her to prove it is to tell her idea is stupid. Bring back the stupid question. Bring back the stupid idea. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. And now, the rape of the mind.
Chapter 8, Trial by Trial. For the Special Marine Corps of Inquiry in Washington that had to judge one of the cases of brainwashing, I was asked, as an expert witness, if I could explain why some of the American officers yielded rather easily to mental pressure exerted by the enemy. It was in the days when congressional investigations in our country were in full swing. In all honesty, I had to answer that sometimes coercive suggestions underlying such investigations could exert conforming pressure on susceptible minds. People are conditioned by numerous psychological processes in our daily political atmosphere. Though we have been forewarned of what totalitarian techniques may do to the mind, there is reason to be alarmed by the possible disruption of values brought about by some of our own troubles. The totalitarian dictator succeeded in transforming his apparatus of justice into an instrument of threat and domination. Where once a balanced feeling of justice had been recognized as the noblest ideal of civilized man, this ideal was now scoffed at by cynics like Hitler and Goebbels, and called a synthetic emotion, useful only to impress or appease people. Thus, in the hands of totalitarian inquisitors and judges, justice had become a farce, a piece of propaganda to soothe the people's conscience. Investigative power is misused to arouse prejudices and animosities in those bystanders who have become too confused to distinguish between right and wrong. The totalitarian has taught us that the courts and the judiciary can be used as tools of thought control. That is why we have to study how our own institutions, intentionally and unobtrusively, may be used to distort our concept of democratic freedom. The downfall of justice. To a psychologist, perhaps the most interesting aspect of the Moscow purge trials between 1936 and 1938 was the deep sense of moral shock felt by people all over the world whose trust in the judicial process was shaken to its foundations by these perversions of justice. Discussions about the trials always concern themselves less with the question of guilt or innocence of the accused than with the horrifying travesty of justice the trials presented. Somewhere deep in the soul of men lies the conviction that a judge is, by definition, a righteous, impartial man, that an appeal to the courts is the road to truth, that the law stands above corruption, degradation, and perversion. Of course, we recognize that judges are human beings like ourselves. They can make mistakes, as the rest of us do. And we are even willing to accept temporary injustice because we believe that there will be eventual vindication and that the rule of law and justice will remain triumphant. The moment the judicial process becomes a farce, a show to intimidate the people, something in man's soul is profoundly affected. When justice is no longer blind, but has her eye on the main chance, we become frightened and alarmed. To whom shall a man turn if he cannot find justice in the courts? During the course of psychotherapy, one of my patients was called to jury duty. The experience disturbed him deeply, for apparently the prosecutor in this case was more interested in getting a conviction than in finding out the truth. Although the jury had the last word and, by its verdict, condemned the prosecutor's strategy, our juror was greatly upset. What happens, he asked me, in other cases? Suppose the juror cannot see through the lawyer's sophisms. Suppose they're taken in by his constant suggestion and insistence. Indeed, any trial can be used as a weapon of intimidation. It can, in a subtle way, intimidate the jurors, the witnesses, the entire public. In totalitaria, some higher courts exist only to carry out this function of intimidation. Their purpose is to prove to their own citizens and to the world at large that there is a punishing and threatening force controlling the government, and that this force can use the judiciary for its own purposes. An apparently objective official investigation may become a weapon of political control simply through the suggestions that inevitably accompany it. The man who is under investigation is almost automatically stigmatized and blamed because our suspicions are thrust on him. The very fact that he is under scrutiny makes him suspect. Thus, even the so-called democratic power to investigate may become the power to destroy. We must be aware of this danger. Already, the approving or disapproving way of interrogation changes man's thinking about facts. Any judicial action, whether legal or investigative, which receives widespread publicity, exerts some mental pressure on the entire public. It is not only the participants in the action who have a stake in its eventual outcome. The citizens as a whole may well become emotionally involved in the proceedings. Any official investigation can be either a mere show of power or an act of truth. As show of power by a totalitarian government or by an unscrupulous demagogue, it can have frightening consequences. The German Reichstag fire case, the Moscow purge trials, and the court actions against our POWs in China are prime examples of legal action, which served to consolidate the political power of ruthless men and had for their object confusion of a helpless citizenry. An additional intention was to shock the public opinion of the world. If we look at legal inquiry from the point of view of each of its participants, we will see even more clearly the dangers we must guard against.
And that was The Downfall of Justice, and The Trial by Trial was the previous segment. And that's by Joost Mierlo, M.D. Back in a minute. Thank you. This is Ron, your host, the only true conservative in the United States today, bidding adios to all the butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers out there. So I'm reminding you that the left has no authority, no power, and they can't win.